This is Chef John Faulce welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we'll travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We're going to search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to try to cook for you. Biscotti, cucciadotti, pignolotti, cannelloni on March the 19th, y'all. We enjoy the beauty and abundance of St. Joseph's altars, and we all speak Italian food. Join me, Chef John Faulce, and author chef Michelle Ciccoloni as we talk about St. Joseph's Day altars on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Pro-Russian leaders in Crimea are making final preparations for tomorrow's referendum on whether to break away from Ukraine and transfer authority to Moscow. Russia today vetoed a UN resolution declaring the public vote illegal. NPR's Gregory Warner reports that two things are clear in Crimea today. There is heavy pro-Russia support and very obvious efforts to stifle the voice of any pro-Ukrainians.
I was in Yalta, a seaside tourist town on the Black Sea, and people were lining up to take photos with a NATO Niet, NATO No to NATO sign that was hung under the Lenin statue. So popular support for Russia is very high. At the same time, there has not been much safe public space for a dissenting opinion. Activists have reported being beaten, being arrested, disappeared sometimes, and all Ukrainian channels have been cut off the air and replaced with state-run channels from Moscow.
NPR's Gregory Warner reporting from Simferopol. The Malaysian Prime Minister says the search for the missing Malaysian airliner has entered a new phase, saying the flight's communication systems had been deliberately disabled. The BBC's Rupert Winfield Hayes reports.
Malaysia's Prime Minister Najib Razak told the world's media that missing flight MH370 had definitely not crashed into the Gulf of Thailand. Instead, it was deliberately diverted by someone on board. Even more stunning, the Prime Minister confirmed that satellite data shows the plane continued to fly on for 6 hours. That could put it as far north as Kazakhstan or in the far south of the Indian Ocean.
The BBC's Rupert Winfield Hayes. In his weekly address, President Obama talked up his effort to update rules that spell out which workers are eligible for overtime pay.
We're going to update those overtime rules to restore that basic principle that if you have to work more, you should be able to earn more.
Earlier this week, the president took steps to update the rules for what's known as the white-collar exemption. He argued that it was meant to prevent overtime for workers who are already highly paid, but that it's being applied to some salaried workers making less than $23,660 a year. In the GOP message, Republican Representative Bill Johnson blasted the Affordable Care Act, saying it doesn't protect senior citizens. A judge overseeing the Colorado theater shooting case says jurors will deliberate up to three separate times on whether defendant James Holmes should be executed if they convict him of murder. Holmes pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity to killing 12 people. This is NPR. Emergency workers in New York City are still clearing debris from the site of Wednesday's deadly gas explosion in East Harlem. Investigators are waiting to get access to the basements of the two flattened buildings. Fire officials are planning to check meters, pipes, and possible ignition sources. 8 people were killed in the explosion. German cardinals are signaling some divorced and remarried Catholics could receive communion after a penitential period. NPR's Sylvia Poggioli reports the divorce issue is at the center of a new debate Pope Francis has opened within the Roman Catholic Church.
Cardinal Reinhard Marx spoke about the issue in an interview with a German weekly. He cited a proposal that divorced people who recognize their failure can, after a penitential period, seek readmission to the sacraments. Marx said it's a viable path. That proposal was advanced by another German cardinal, Walter Kaspar, at a recent closed meeting at the Vatican chaired by the Pope himself. The proposal reportedly did not go over well with traditionalists, but it's likely to be raised again at a synod, a worldwide bishops' assembly at the Vatican in October that will focus on family issues. Sylvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
For the first time, France has convicted a former Rwandan official in connection with the country's 1994 genocide. A Paris court is sentencing a former Rwandan spy chief to 25 years in jail for complicity in genocide and crimes against humanity in the former French colony. Some 800,000 people were killed in less than 4 months of fighting. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Newman's Own Foundation, giving all profits from Newman's Own to charity and pursuing the common good for over 30 years.
For the finest in classic ska, rocksteady, rockers, DJ, dancehall, and dub, it's Jamon. Cecil here, bringing you Southwest Louisiana's longest-running reggae tradition, Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m., or Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m., and streaming live anytime at krvs.org.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table today. It's so nice to have you stirring it up with us, and I want to thank our executive producer, Michelle Yark, sitting at the table right here. How are you doing? I see you have your school colors on today.
I do. I turned in my paper today, and I'm feeling all spry.
Notre Dame Seminary, huh?
So I have this on for inspiration.
Inspiration. What was your paper about in your theology class? Huh? What are you on?
The faith of the Canaanite woman.
A what?
I figured that was appropriate for me.
Was that the Canaanite woman, like, that Jesus chastised a little bit?
Yeah, like he didn't want to help her.
Yeah, he didn't want to help, but then she came back and made a story, and then the apostles learned from it. I remember that.
You remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
you read
yeah,
my paper?
She, no, I didn't read it yet, but she talked about crumbs from the dogs at the table, and even the children eat the dogs.
Jesus referred to the Gentiles as dogs.
I see.
So that's what was so perplexing, but in that was a lesson.
Parables were great stories. I mean, that's how you learn in those days, parable. The fact is, I try to do that in the office. In the office, I try to go to each one of the offices in a little parable because some of my people have a little difficulty learning. So I talk about crumbs from the master's table myself.
Huh? Yeah, we learn a lot from it, too.
How you doing, Dean? Dean Slamo, engineer over there. What's going on?
Keep the parables coming. I enjoy that, Reed.
I see Chloe back there, too. Did Chloe have any luck calling London, Chloe? No luck.
No luck.
Anyway, y'all, it's so nice to have all of you with us today. And I'm going to tell you what, it's a pretty good day because everybody seems to be in a good mood. You're in a good mood today, Michelle.
I'm relieved. I'm good. You know, Lynn has begun.
I know. Lent has begun. I'm
sitting you gave up anything?
Well, let me tell you what happened. Yesterday.
Oh, here we go.
No story, Slama. Yesterday, I'm sitting in the Restaurant Revolution in New Orleans, and I'm getting ready for this luncheon with this bridal party who's coming in to taste the meal. And Lent comes up. I couldn't eat any meat. It was Friday, and everybody at the table said, why can't you eat meat? I said, well, you know, I'm Catholic, and I can't eat meat. It's Lent. And everybody at the table took their fork and dipped into their short rib. I said, now I know what penance means. Now I understand perfectly. Anyway, how you holding up? Pretty good?
Yeah, doing pretty well. You know, I decided to try to give up meat for Lent.
All Lent. I'll see.
Kind of become pescatarian and vegetarian for the next 6 weeks. So far, so good. I haven't slipped yet.
Yeah,
but we're what, on day three?
8 hours.
Day three, or four, ten.
Well, that's good to hear because it's all about sacrifice. It's all about sacrifice. I have to admit that even with our delicious seafood that takes the place of everything. We talk about the lusciousness of lump crab and crawfish. Mm. Now the crawfish is done. You see how the good Lord is? He takes away meat but gives us crawfish at the same time of year every year. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
But I have to say I still crave sausages.
I still
love pot roast pork smothered down with garlic in that pot. But we do get some reprieve in a couple of days. I mean, St. Joseph's Day is rolling around. And so, well, still no meat, but you get all the sweet fixings on the St. Joseph's altar. I love St. Joseph's altar.
Absolutely. You know, tomorrow, we're actually participating in a St. Joseph altar tomorrow at Cypress Springs Mercedarian Prayer Center.
Absolutely. I just finished my
fish.
Yeah, you know where Cypress Springs is?
Right next to
White
Oak.
Neighbor at White Oak.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Sister Dulce Maria, and she has that beautiful. I really do think it's the best. There's some fabulous work being done on St. Joseph's altars in Louisiana. But I have to say that one of the newest ones over at the Mercedarian Center is absolutely the most stunning altar I've seen in a long time, and I just can't stand to go over there. I do a fish for it. You know, I do the decorated fish. But when I go to put it on the table, they always have a premier spot for my silver tray with this gorgeous fish. But then I look up and I see the cucharada roses.
The sandals and staff of bread. And
the
then
cakes, the cakes, the pies.
And you go to the, you know, to the area where people are going to be fed, and you see the carrots that I bring.
Yeah, the carrots that I cook. That she brings and I cook. Yeah, she's a delivery person. When she can make it, let me say.
No.
Otherwise, it's, are you going? Can you just bring the carrots you cooked? Anyway, I will. I'm happy to.
Normally, he says, I'll make them. Let me do it. And he gets offended if I don't allow.
Well, I'll see if I can break that offense.
Well, that's crazy talk. But the altars are beautiful, full of olives and artichokes and stuffed peppers, pies, cakes, fruit. And like you mentioned, the cannolis and the cucharada and the biscotti. Oh, my gosh. It's hard to imagine that we're in the middle of Lent, right? It's kind of like an oasis in the desert.
Yeah, I would say so.
And the dishes are not just laid out, you know, willy-nilly. A lot of care, a lot of love going in to making sure that the arrangements and the presentations are beautiful. There are candles and religious statues, depictions of the Holy Family, and other religious objects, adornments interspersed between the food and the offerings, and all to honor St. Joseph. You know, this is the Italians' way of honoring and thanking St. Joseph for interceding when their crops were dying from drought back in the Middle Ages.
So this goes all the way back. It's so big in Louisiana and very few people in the Sicilian area remember. So it goes back all the way to the Middle Ages.
Absolutely. And it was a promise made and a promise that's been kept these hundreds of years. Sicilians credit St. Joseph, or San Giuseppe, as he's known in Italy, for bringing the rains that saved the fava bean crop that kept them from starving.
That's why they call it the lucky bean. I spent a little time in Italy. I mean, you and I traveled there as well to do a couple of things over in the Parma region. And I was a little shocked to know that the Sicilians, even though the promise was made and the practice is still done there, it's really much bigger here, I think, in Louisiana, don't you think? I mean,
it's huge in Louisiana for sure. But, you know, to answer that question, I'd like to go to Sicily during this time of year. And
I see. Here
and
we
I
go,
can
Slum.
Get back to a report
team. Yeah, you probably need some microphones out that way.
Yeah. I think so.
Anyway, the items on the St. Joseph's altar, like at the Mercedarian Center over on George O'Neill Lane, that you're going to be able to see if you go to visit. When is it open anyway? I mean,
it opens at 1, and it goes to 4.
Is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Anyway, the items on that altar, y'all, just spectacular. You know, naturally you're going to find bread, but not just bread. Bread shapes and twists and braided rings and beautiful breads shaped like crosses and chalices and the Sacred Heart and a shape of hammer to honor, of course, the carpenter, St. Joseph. You'll also find breads in the shape of fish. The tradition of the breads was started in Sicily, where fish and shellfish were much, much more common than meat. So most of those breads will be shaped some kind of way to remind us of the fish of the sea, you know, from Sicily.
And, of course, considering that we're a seafood-loving people, it stands to reason that on New Orleans St. Joseph altars, you'll find breads even in the shapes of alligators and turtles, maybe even a crab or two. The breads all have a sprinkling of seeds on top to represent carpenter's dust.
Wow.
Carpenter's sawdust. And sometimes you'll see that just like little breadcrumbs spread on the altars.
Like that thing, they call it malika?
That's it.
Malika.
Yeah.
Yeah, malika.
And of course, the breads are not for eating, but at some altars you'll find delicious Italian zeppola.
Ah.
Oh, so good. So good. They're a lot like beignets.
Fried dough. Yeah.
Yeah, fried dough, about the size of a ping pong ball rather than the pillow-shaped form of our beignets, but they're sweet and covered in powdered sugar and delicious.
Well, you know, a lot of those traditions, you know, before coming to America, the Sicilians were very closed and insular people. While the immigrants from Naples settled in New York, New Jersey, Boston, and other cities along the eastern seaboard in 1870, the U.S. Census estimates that there were more Italians in New Orleans than in any other city in America. At one time, not too long ago, Italian Americans were the largest ethnic group in New Orleans. They are extremely family-oriented, and early in their settlements here, they continued in the fashion of remaining very, very, very close-knit mm-hmm. to the families and to the traditions and to their work ethic. They really carved a tremendous niche out of in this area for not only their food, but their customs, such as St. Joseph's altars.
And family and faith are still the most important things, I think, to the Sicilians who immigrated so long ago. You know, during the Feast of St. Joseph, you'll see fresh green branches placed over the doors of a lot of the New Orleanians or local Italians' homes, and that means that there's a St. Joseph altar inside and that you're welcome to come in and share in the abundance. Having a private altar in your home represents the personal exchange between the host and St. Joseph that must be shared with the public in order for it to be complete. You have to have that element of charity and sacrifice. It's also a time when those who have gone on are remembered with photos and prayer offerings. Prayer petitions are often written and put into a bowl or a box at the altar, hoping that St. Joseph will answer. Isn't that beautiful?
Yep, yep. Remember we went to that St. Joseph's Basilica up in Toronto?
Montreal.
Oh,
the oratory, St. Joseph Oratory.
I was just thinking about, because when you talk about St. Joseph's altars, I know a lot of people out there are thinking about a big church altar or whatever, but it's not really that. Describe that altar in your mind right now.
It's a food altar. It's a complete food altar. It's kind of in the shape of a Franciscan cross. So you have across the front and then tables coming down the middle.
Right.
There are statues. There are large pictures of the Holy Family, the breads that you talked about, vegetables, abundant vegetables. And at the back of the altar is usually three tiers, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, Mary, Joseph, and Joseph. And all of those vegetables and cakes and pies are on there. This altar didn't just happen overnight. I mean, it's been in preparation.
Yeah, people have been cooking.
Months.
And we are, no, absolutely. I wanted Michelle to describe that to you because a lot of people may not know what to expect. You walk in and here's the greatest abundance of food, cooked foods, cakes, pastries of every kind, but most of them decorated in the shape of some Christian symbol because of St. Joseph, but no meat.
No meat.
No cheese.
But at the end of the day, you know, because there are so many fresh vegetables and cakes and pies, it doesn't go to waste. That food is then donated either a shelter or some home in need of food.
And at one time, there was a tradition of begging or asking for donations for the altar. You know, it's kind of a sign of humility and remembrance of the starving ancestors in Sicily. Creating an altar is also a person's way of saying thank you, thank you, thank you to St. Joseph for the answered prayers or a request to watch over and protect the family. So today, y'all, we're talking St. Joseph's altars. What a tradition. What a great tradition honoring one of our great, great groups of settlers who decided to call Louisiana home. We're talking about the Italians. We're talking about homage to St. Joseph. We'll be back in a minute.
We spent the night at St. Joseph's, shaking and shivering in fever, nurses and criminals before us. I will stay here with you my love.
Greetings, I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left-field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM, KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Take our bread, we ask you, take our hearts, we love you, take our lives, O Father, we are yours, we are yours. Take our bread.
Welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. Today we're talking about the Feast of St. Joseph and, of course, the wonderful St. Joseph's altars that Louisiana is so well known for, as well as the world. And, Michelle, we have a fabulous guest on
the
show.
We do. I love saying her name.
You like saying her name. I said I wish I had her last
name. I know.
Name.
Michelle Ciccoloni.
Isn't that great?
Michelle Ciccoloni.
If you're going to do a St. Joseph's Day show on St. Joseph's Boulevard, you should have Michelle Ciccoloni with you, is the way I say it.
That's right. Michelle is an award-winning food writer. She's authored 19 books. I hate to say it. She's ahead of us.
I got to get busy. We're on number 11, and it's only because you're not Ciccoloni. You don't have that Sicilian drive.
I'm going back to Coniglio.
You don't
That's
have that
it.
Drive. That's what you have, 19 books. I'm so proud of Michelle.
She's known, of course, for Italian cooking. Her books include The Sopranos Family Cookbook, Entertaining with the Sopranos. They were both number one on the New York Times bestseller list.
That's another thing we've never done.
I know. Huh? You need to get busy on that. Her book, The Italian Slow Cooker, which is very interesting, was number one best-selling Italian cookbook on Amazon for 3 months straight. That's huge. She's written about food, wine, travel, all the things we love. Published in newspapers, Gourmet, Bon Appetit, Wine Spectator. She's been on shows with Emeril, good friend Emeril, CBS Morning Show, Good Morning America. You name the TV show, she's probably been on it. Now she can add Stirring It Up to her repertoire, we're proud to say. She teaches cooking at schools, culinary shops all around the country.
I can see an invitation.
I was just going to say she's going to hold on to her hat because she's going to be doing something at the Culinary Institute. She's a menu consultant, recipe developer. Most recently, she was awarded the prestigious Distinguished Service Award by the Italian Trade Commission. What an honor. In one of her travels to Italy, Michelle visited, you had this question earlier, the St. Joseph's Altars of Sicily, and she's here today to tell us all about the experience and how we can tag along next time. Michelle Ciccoloni, welcome to Stirring It Up.
What a wonderful introduction. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, we thank you so much for being with us. I know we chatted just a moment before we went on air, but your accolades are just absolutely incredible. And I said I can see an invite coming to Louise. The Chef John Falls Culinary Institute at Nicholls State University, which we do a Bachelor of Science, a college degree in culinary. We have a 4-year degree, and of course, even though we're all about classical cuisine, no student can graduate from my 4-year program without coming through my Culinary 279 class, which is an appreciation for the history, the culture, the cuisine of the nations that created Creole. And, of course, number seven of those nations are the Italians. So that's why I said you have an invite coming. I can see that already. So anyway,
that's fascinating.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for being with us.
You know, we have to say we were perusing your website, and under the travel section, we saw you had posted about a trip to Paris. Well, you know, that speaks to us right away. But one of the dishes you ate there, and this is a little off the Lenten topic, but it was crisp pork belly with lentils. And once we saw that, we knew you were a kindred spirit. So do you enjoy cooking with pork and all its fats?
Oh, absolutely. You know, first of all, I want to make a little confession, though we're going to talk about Sicily and the St. Joseph's tables. My family is actually from the Naples area, and the Ciccolone name is my husband's family name. But the Neapolitans traditionally cooked with lard, and that's what I grew up with. My mom, and I'm watching my mom and my grandmother, would render lard from the belly fat. Every couple of weeks, they'd make a big batch of it, and they would fry their meatballs in lard. You know, people always associate Italians with olive oil, but we were a lard family.
a lard-loving lot.
A lard family. Pork lard all the way. And, of course, nowadays I do use a lot more olive oil, but I love the flavor of good fresh lard. There's nothing like it.
Oh.
And anything related to it, too, like that crisp pork belly. Fits right in.
We had a guest who had been on our radio show a couple of weeks ago, and we brought her on a little Boudin tour.
Jennifer McLaughlin. I know you know her and her books on fat and odd bits.
Well, we walked into Don's Specialty Meats, and I thought she was going to fall on the floor when she saw the gallon jars of bacon fat.
Of lard. No,
of lard, yeah. It was music to her stomach.
Oh, for sure. That's the best. I know there's a pizzeria in the Naples area where you can go to, and you'll see them just before they put the pizzas into the oven, they drizzle it with liquefied lard, melted lard. And it is to die for. So, they call it a meatless pizza, but the fact of the matter is that little dressing on top changes the whole flavor profile.
Well, you know, we are a society of lard coming from, when you think of the French, the Spanish, the Germans, the Italians, all of these cultures coming to settle Louisiana after the late 1600s. Mm-hmm. You can imagine that we love all pork, but we certainly love lard. And Michelle was referencing Jennifer walking into one of our country grocery stores, and there was a whole shelf of gallon jars of lard sitting there. And she said, "Oh, my God, I have never seen this ever in a store." I said, well, welcome to Louisiana. You're nice.
That alone is a reason to visit, as far as I'm concerned.
I love that idea of the pizza drizzled with the lard.
That's a great idea.
Oh, I love that. Do you think
give it a try.
I will, absolutely.
Do you think Father Miles would give us a dispensation for Lent?
Well, yeah, lard.
I mean, it's not meat, right?
No, that's another state of, that's kind of one of those other states.
Shouldn't that be
meat.
Like the pool do?
Exactly.
Just saying. Anyway, Michelle, what was it that inspired you to choose a culinary career and a writing career?
Well, my family always loved food. There was always food in the house. My father had a little grocery store, and he loved to cook, and my mother loved to cook. So I learned to cook when I was very young. I like to say the first thing I remember making was espresso. and I couldn't finish a meal without it, you know. It just became my habit. So I was brought into the idea of eating well and tasting food at a very young age, and it was the thing I loved to do. It was my hobby. And so when I had a chance to make a decision about what my career was going to be, I decided, well, I love food. I love reading about food. I used to love reading Gourmet magazine, which I miss so much. Oh. And that became my aspiration, to become a writer for Gourmet, because it just seemed like a dream. And that's what I did. I headed in that direction, and I finally reached that place. And now Gourmet magazine is gone, but I've been writing for so many different publications over the years.
No, I mean, a really great, great career. And, looking at your bio and seeing that you know, you've traveled to so many unbelievable places in writing, but
yeah.
I was intrigued by being by you being invited to Sicily to experience the traditional St. Joseph's Day celebration. But this particular St. Joseph celebration that you went to had a special twist. Tell us a little bit about that feast of St. Giuseppe in honor of the father whose name was Giuseppe.
Yes. A number of years ago now, sadly, Anatas Galanza, who was a great food writer, she had a wonderful cooking school in Sicily, which now her daughter still runs. I'm happy to see that she's continuing the tradition. But Anna was a Marchesa, and her family is royalty in Sicily. And they own the Regaliali Winery. And on the property at Regaliali, that's where Anna had her cooking school and a lovely old traditional house where she would put up guests. And she invited me and my husband and some other friends to come for the San Giuseppe celebration. And it had double significance for her family because her father, the Count, his name was Giuseppe. And so the Italians give more weight to a name day even than someone's birthday. And this was a very significant birthday. And so they invited us for the feast and to experience the St. Joseph's celebrations in the area and then their own family celebration where family and friends came from all over for his birthday. And it was wonderful. We were there for about a week, and we saw so many of the traditions that they maintained on the farm. For example, they raised their own wheat, and then they made bread. They ground the wheat, and then they make bread from it. They have sheep, and every morning they would make sheep's milk ricotta on the farm, and we would have it for breakfast. Nothing, I can't imagine anything more delicious than that wonderful, wonderful honey. And so many great experiences.
You know, I was just thinking about that warm ricotta with that honey in the morning coming right out of the hot water and eating. I've just kind of sat at little roadside tables in Sicily myself and enjoyed that. And every now and again, I just yearn for that dish. You know, you just, even though we make ricotta here as well, we have, you know, when I had my dairy running, I would always tell my cheesemakers, make some hot ricotta for me. Just get it out, and I got honey waiting, but they can never duplicate it. Maybe it was just being sitting at that little outdoor table in Sicily that made the difference, right?
You didn't have the right terroir.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So did y'all go to a lot of altars when you were there? And was it just a day altar, or were the altars set up for a longer period of time?
Well, I don't think the food would last more than a day or two, though they're careful about what the foods that are placed on the altar are, but a lot of the foods wouldn't last more than a day. So I think that for the most part they were a day or two long. But the celebration begins a couple of days in advance, and in the town of Salemi, for example, they have the most elaborate celebration that we saw. And there are parades, and there are special masses, and there are musical performances and plays. So there's a lot of things, you know, before and after the actual St. Joseph's table that go along with it. And it's just amazing to see how elaborate these tables are in the individual homes. We saw many different varieties of St. Joseph's tables. Like, for example, we went to several private homes. These were just small homes in a little town, a little farm community. And when we arrived with the Marchesa, they were so honored to have her there, you know, and with her American guests, they were even more thrilled because this was something that had never happened in this little town before. And they just welcomed us with open arms. And the whole room was filled with makeshift table that they had set up for the occasion. And on the table were all of the foods that the family had prepared. And at the end of the room, there was the altar with a portrait of St. Joseph in one home, or a statue of St. Joseph in another, flowers, fruit, and all kinds of things to honor the saint. And it was just amazing to see how one small home could be so filled with so much food. and so they just packed everything they possibly could into it. And the whole family stood around. The neighbors were all there to see us and to meet the Marquesa and to greet her. And they were just so delightful. I felt very honored by their attention to us.
Well, it sounds like it was just absolutely remarkable. You know, here in Louisiana at this time of year, the altars take on not only the traditional shape and the foods, all the breads and the cakes, etc., that's normal, but a lot of seafood on our altar, a lot of shrimp, a lot of redfish, the decorated fresh fish. Is there some similarities in that in the altars that you've seen in Sicily?
Well, the town that I was in and the area that I was in was more inland, and so I didn't see the fresh fish that you're describing, but they did have lots of small fishes, and they had calamari, for example. They had shrimp. There was a lot of sardines and anchovies, and also bacala, preserved
cod.
Exactly, and that was cooked in different ways. But the large fresh fish I didn't see, but I think probably if I were in a more coastal part of Sicily, you would see more of that.
Right, that makes sense because Louisiana, of course, being surrounded by water, we see a lot of seafoods. Michelle?
Well, I was just wondering, is it part of the tradition there that you view the altar and then the family has also prepared a meal that visitors partake in?
No. As I understood it, the food was laid out and presented, and guests came by, neighbors, friends, people from other towns came by to look and to admire. They might have had like small bites of things that you could, because just looking at this table, your mouth was watering. I mean, it was really drool-worthy, but no one was allowed to touch it.
Well, I love that drool-worthy. Yeah, I'm writing that down.
No one was allowed to touch it until the priest came to bless it. So there was this viewing period first, and then the priest came in a procession, and he was accompanied by what they called the Virginetti. And the Virginetti are little children dressed as Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Aww. And so once the priest blessed the food, then the Virginetti were required to taste the food first. And it wasn't until after all of that had been done, the prayers had been said, that the food was available to eat. And it wasn't a separate meal, but people ate the food that was on display.
Oh, that's awesome. And were there a lot of cheeses on the altar, being that so many fresh cheeses are made in the region? You know, we're talking about the ricotta earlier.
Yeah, you know, I do not call cheese. It was primarily, there was some ricotta, I suppose, and certainly a lot of cheese was used in the preparation of the food, but there was not hunks of cheese it wasn't in that form. But there was certainly ricotta used in the pastries and in the desserts. And I would say that the major portion of the food was fried food, vegetables, many, many different kinds of fried vegetables, eggplant, zucchini, stuffed, and just plain fried as cutlets. There were a lot of beans and legumes. That's all part of the tradition, too, because the idea, they represent the seeds and the coming of the new season and the spring, and this is the season when those seeds would be planted. So there were many different kinds of lentils and chickpeas and wheat berry dishes on the table, and vegetables, as I said, mushrooms and onions and, you know, you name it. Then there were the desserts. There were a lot of desserts. Of course, there was no meat of any kind, no lard, no pork, and no meat, and no other meat because of the Lenten season.
Yeah, I think we even eliminate cheese on Oscar. We do the malika, the sawdust. That's the breadcrumbs because they don't use the cheese on our altars here. Michelle, can you hang over? We're going to take a quick commercial and give us another minute or so. We really appreciate it so much. And, y'all, we don't want you to go anywhere because we're going to be back in just a second.
The Word became flesh, dwelling among us, come to the altar of God. people chosen, an ancient promise, come to the altar of God. We're nourished by you, the bread that feeds us, come to the altar of God. All are welcome here. All are welcome here.
From the lullabies of the highlands to the rowdy roar of the northern and southern coasts, the guitar music of Madagascar has to be heard to be believed. Georges Collinet here. Join us next time for Malagasy Guitar on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we'll spend the entire show with Los Lobos. We'll also hear from our feature host, Adam Hill, as he continues his series, Made in Memphis. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Comics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. Today we're having fun and we're learning a lot about St. Joseph's Day altars. And Michelle, we decided to beg Michelle to stay over for a moment so we could finish up.
You wanted to say she colony again. I think that was it.
Anyway, Michelle, you were putting your hand up.
Well, something that Michelle said earlier kind of interested me because it sounded like St. Joseph's Day seems like it's more like a week-long celebration. The altars may be a day, but the performances and the town and people getting into it and dressing. Can you tell us more about some of the activities that are associated with the feast day in the areas that you were visiting?
Yeah, one of the things that we really haven't touched on is the bread, because bread is central to the Feast of San Giuseppe. And when I say bread, I mean traditional loaves, as we might expect in Sicily with the sesame seeds or without, baked in different forms. The most typical is the bastone di San Giuseppe. That means St. Joseph's walking stick. And it's a loaf of bread shaped to look like his stick. And then there are bread shaped like flowers and bread shaped like St. Joseph's slippers. There are bread shaped like hammers because of his profession as a carpenter. Those are the breads appear on the tables everywhere and a very significant part of the celebration. And then there are the little bread sculptures that are not for eating, but they're decorative. And in the town of Salemi that I was describing, where there were the processions and the performances and so forth, the whole town, the gates of the town, the shop fronts, everything is decorated with these little bread sculptures made of, you know, like a bread dough. So kind of like that salt dough. I know we used to make Christmas decorations out of that hard baked dough
right. When
we were kids. And they make those all year round to decorate the town. And they decorate the floats that go down the street and that's all part of the celebration as well. And they're very ancient, the designs of them. They're very intricate. It's not just a little wreath or something. They're made to look like birds or flowers or leaves. And it's very, very beautiful, very artistic. And there's a lot of competition between the women in the town on who makes the most beautiful ones, and they collect them all year round. And I have a few of them that I'm very proud to keep, and I've had them for many years now, and they still hold up, and they're as beautiful as ever. And that's also a very big part of it.
So are there different sizes? I mean, large ones, small ones, kind of miniature?
Yeah, there are different sizes, but there are two different kinds of bread, in other words. There's the bread for eating, like the walking stick, and then there are these little bread sculptures, which are just like the size of your hand. But, wow. Some, you know, depending on what they depict, they could be larger as well. But they decorate the whole town. People use them on their storefronts, on their homes, on their doorways, on their tables, inside and out.
Well, you know, also, Michelle, here on the altars, we have such a large Italian community and Sicilian community here in South Louisiana. When we go into the altars here, it's very common to see also the beautiful, beautiful breads of all sizes, some in crosses, some in chalices, some in fish, hammers, the Sacred Heart of Jesus that's so beautifully carved and filled with the figs, the cucciadades. Is it a dying art? I mean, are we seeing it? Louisiana is still really, we have so much of an Italian population here. We're still seeing many altars, but I think we're starting to lose some of the larger church altars. Many of the homes still have altars. What are you seeing as a tradition here in America? Are you finding any staying alive, or we're starting to see less and less?
I think we see less and less of it because, you know, people are getting away from their heritage. There's intermarriage. You know, the old folks who witness these things die off. Unfortunately, I think there's less of it. There's less of it here in New York. There used to be a lot of them, I understand, but the Sicilian communities have dispersed, and so you don't find that as much anymore. But I remember reading, there's a great author, for anyone who's very interested in Sicilian history and tradition, Mary Taylor Simeti wrote some very important books on the subject of Sicilian history. And I remember her saying in one of her books that she noticed that some of the St. Joseph's tables that she visited many years ago, they were serving Coca-Cola, and there was rock music playing in the church. But no, you know what was interesting? She said that that was a sign of the health of the tradition, that people were incorporating modern concepts, modern ideas into what was an ancient tradition, and that was an indication of the health of it. So I hope she's right. I think about that sometimes.
Well, no, I mean, I do too. I mean, I wouldn't look at it that way, but hearing it, it may very well be. Well, we're fortunate, I think, very fortunate in this little country we call Louisiana. We have seven distinct nations that, beginning with the Native Americans and ending with the Sicilian and Italians who arrived here after our Civil War, that really created this mixture that we call Creole. And one of the things that I'm so proud of as a Louisianian is how just passionate we are about our traditions, about our family, about the culture of the families, and paying homage to ancestors. Every culture has their own museum, their own heritage center, and these traditions are kept alive. At my culinary school at Nicholls State University, I teach each one of these seven nations, and when we get to the Italians, we always have the foods that are so important to the Sicilians being cooked and talked about that day and lectured on, including the St. Joseph's altars. We talk about those, and we normally have a guest to come in as well. I will definitely be calling you. Have you been to Louisiana before? I'm sure you must have been.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, many times.
Oh, well, great, great.
And I'd love to come back.
We would love to have you. Very sincere. The fact is, Jennifer McLaughlin, when she said the other day, she said, a lot of people invite me, but very few people follow through.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you won't have that problem here. I can guarantee you. So Michelle, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for sharing. And also your accomplishments. My God, you have inspired so many people in 19 books and the amount of time you spent in media and sharing your own great culture and history is just phenomenal. And we thank you so much for being here with us on Stirring It Up today.
My pleasure, Chef. I can't wait to meet you in person.
I promise you we will make that happen in the spring, okay?
Excellent.
Thank you so much. All right, everybody. What a great interview that was.
Oh,
that was
she's wonderful. Fantastic.
Yeah, I really loved her passion. It was great.
And, you know, we've got to go to this little town she mentioned, obviously, at this time of year.
New York, you mean?
No, no. Yeah, right. No. Salimi.
No, of course. Salimi. No, of course. Really
sounds like salami, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, they must have some of that going on.
I bet they
do. Anyway, Michelle, what about books on the subject?
Oh, my goodness.
This is the time when we share with our listeners what's available in books and printed materials to keep this subject alive, because we do want to pass it on. That's what Stirring It Up is all about.
Yes, indeedy. Well, for all of our Sicilian friends, especially those in New Orleans, there's a wonderful book called St. Joseph Altars that was done by Carrie McCafferty. This is one of the earlier books by the famous New Orleans photographer, and it is a snapshot in time as Sicilian New Orleans celebrate and pay homage to St. Joseph, you know, for bringing the rain and saving everyone from the starvation in Sicily. The beautiful photos of the abundance, the absolute abundance at the altars and homes and churches and gathering places, places of business, are accompanied by the history of the event. The last pages of the book are St. Joseph's Day altar recipes from local New Orleanians. Of course, every Sicilian has the only recipe for each cannoli, for each cucciadata, I know from experience. It is an older book, but there's still a couple available on Amazon. They're well worth searching out. Another book that's surely worth mentioning, especially for those in Louisiana with Sicilian roots, is called After Laughing Comes Crying, Sicilians on Louisiana Plantations. This was written by Joseph Cacibuda. This is the story of the immigration to Louisiana of so many Sicilians during the late 1800s and all of the hardships that they faced, full of rich details based on events of that time that truly will stir your emotions as you get a sense of what it was like for our early Sicilian settlers that are so much a part of the fabric of our state, and especially the food fabric of Louisiana. And, of course, I want to mention Michelle's book, The Sopranos Family Cookbook. She compiled the recipes, and if you're a lover of the Sopranos series, you'll absolutely love the book. Collection of recipes that would have been served in the restaurant of the character, Artie, and the reminiscences that are told in the voices of the characters of the series. Lots of photos of the characters, scenes from the show. All really good.
What about you, Slama? What's going on our Facebook? Facebook.com/stirring, S-T-I-R-R-I-N, Starting It Up Radio. What's going on that? Any action?
Oh, we got all kinds of action. Constant conversation over there on our social media footprint. That's a Facebook page of ours. But we have a Chef Bob Birmingham that was complimenting you on an excellent episode of Top Chef that we would like to let our stovehounds know is out there and is making its rounds. Danny Lupton came on a couple weeks ago, and he was saying how he bumped into an old friend of yours, Thomas Hood, who's a chef in Houston at Chef To Go. And he was showing a picture of you and Chef Hood that I think you're posing in his kitchen. And old Danny Lupton was talking about y'all's pilgrimage to Israel.
Last winter. Wow. Yeah, it was cold.
Well, that's great. I need to go back and search that out.
Huh? I know.
So, old Lupton saying hi. But yeah, we encourage our stovehounds to come on by our Facebook page and come on by with suggestions. We're always looking for excellent topics that maybe pick your interest that we can go and send our team of researchers and experts out to get the information on. And so we can have a broadcast that's custom fit.
Well, no, and we're always interested in hearing your comments and always interested in hearing things that you would like to hear us talk about. And, you know, the gamut is wide here. I mean, you know, you can tell us whatever you'd like to hear. We'd love to go search it out for you and chat about it. I want to mention that on March the 23rd.
Coming up.
In just a week, the Dinner of the Century. Michelle, you have to tell everybody about the Dinner of the Century. It's going to take place at the Royal Sonesta Hotel on Bourbon Street in Bienville in New Orleans. It is the first of our annual events in New Orleans for the Chef John Falls Culinary Institute's new building that's coming up in Thibodaux, Louisiana. Our new building, about 40,000 square feet of kitchens and classrooms for culinary arts at our center. And tell them about the dinner. What a unique idea.
Oh, my gosh. We are creating, and will each year create, a historic menu of some ancient feast or repast from years gone by. this year is the 200th anniversary of the writing of the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
So this, and it was written during the War of 1812. It was written in 1814. And at the same time, you know, the Americans expected to be victorious. And when they lost the battle to the British, the president, who was James Madison, James and Dolly were fairly flabbergasted. They had planned a victory dinner this one particular battle. So the tables were set. The meats were on the spit.
The spits, the joints were roasting.
Joints were roasting.
Ready to go.
The wine was decanting. And all of a sudden, word came that the British won.
This is the battle of at Fort
After
McHenry.
After the fall of McHenry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Redcoats are coming. They have to abandon the White House, leaving everything on the table. After they leave, the British come in. Find the table set. Dinner is prepared. Very nice of the Madisons to welcome as such. They sat down to a sumptuous meal.
Oh, goodness.
And then they torched the joint.
Then they burned the White House.
Bonfire. Fireworks after the dinner.
Oh, goodness.
But we're recreating that dinner.
That dinner. Okay.
Right. And the Madisons will be there. That's at the Rawlinson Nest Hotel. And y'all, all funds collected, tickets are $200 a piece. So we want you to come, tables of 10, or you can get one single ticket. But it's going to be an enjoyable evening, historic music. It's going to be wonderful. And the Madisons will be there to tell the story about what happened that night. And the students will be serving in the greatest chefs of New Orleans. All of the great chefs will be there because we're honoring our Hall of Fame inductees. Over the last 16, 17 years, we've inducted every year someone who has made a tremendous mark on culinary or our history of Louisiana. And, of course, we have Ruth Fertel, and we have Leah Chase and Warren LaRuth. And
Joe Maselli.
Joe Maselli, the Italian, the great Italian museum.
Started the American...
Italian-American Museum. Anyway, y'all, it is an evening to be remembered as we remember that historic day in 1812 when the British sat down to eat the meal, and we're going to complete it here in New Orleans. And that's just a week from now. Tickets are available by calling Nicholls State University, and I ask for the Chef John Falls Culinary Institute. And all of you companies out there who maybe need to treat some of your customers to a great event. What a great night that would be. You can honor some of your customers and pay homage to culinary arts in Louisiana and all the young students who are over there. We'd love to have you, and let them know you heard about it right here. Anyway, Michelle, I do have some recipes. I have the stuffed artichokes on our website. I also have the Cucinati recipe, the anise cookies. So I have a lot of great recipes there. We want to thank Michelle for being with us on the show today. What a great guest she is. And remember the St. Joseph's Altar over at the Cypress Springs Mercedarian Prayer Center. Well, that's tomorrow, right?
For most of our listeners, it's tomorrow. It is Sunday before St. Joseph's Day, which is March 19th.
And that's right on that's around George O'Neill Lane in Baton Rouge, Cypress Springs Mercedarian Prayer Center. Y'all, happy St. Joseph's Day, and say a special little prayer to a saint who did a lot of good for a lot of people, including his son, Jesus. What a nice man he was. Anyway, y'all, see you next week.
Hear anecdotes and reflections from Cathy Ryan, who possesses one of the best-loved voices in Irish music, heard through the years with Cherish the Ladies and many other collaborators. You have a front-row seat as you join us in Conversation and Song this week on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Tune in every Saturday night at midnight for The Diamond Sea, a weekly mixtape featuring the best in independent music from the 80s, 90s, and today. Here on 88.7 KRVS, public radio for Acadiana.
Hello, this is Helen Forster from E-Town. We've got one of my favorite singer-songwriters with us this week, the brilliantly talented Gregory Alan Isakoff. Nathaniel Rateliff also joins us to share a couple of his original tunes, and we've got a great Achievement Award story for you, too, this week in E-Town. Join us.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.